You're listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWocker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. iwoca.co.uk.
I got second one time in 2018, and I'm still the same person. And I hope even better. So if you can get second, you can also win. And especially coming here with two nice TTs. I hope to be in top shape and really fight it out for the win. And of course, Primoz is having that same goal and that same mindset. And he also has more... the last 2 years he's been the best rider of the world. So we definitely have him as a leader going into it, but we have me and Steven Kruiswijk as shadow leaders, how do you say it? So and then it all depends how it goes. So we don't necessarily make a clear plan. We only go for Primoz, but definitely he's our main guy.
Well, that was Tom Demula speaking only last week about his plans for the 2021 season. Myself and Orla Chenoui, I'm Richard Moore, and me and Orla Chenoui were out in Spain at the Jumbo Visma training camp. And then a few days later, a bombshell, Tom Demula announced that he is stopping racing, taking a break. I'm with Daniel Freib.
The two things linked, Richard, your presence in Spain and Tom Demula announcing 2 or 3 days later that he didn't he lost the will to continue.
That's a great unanswered question, which I'm sure will also be asked by Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard. What on earth did you say to him?
I mean, that was your first response, Lionel.
What on earth did you say to him? I mean, it must have been directly related to you interviewing him at length in Alicante.
I've been going back over it. I've been combing back through it and trying to figure out what it was. But joking aside, I mean, this is a huge story. Tom Demula, on the eve of a season that his team had just announced his schedule for, and then hours later, he apparently had a bit of a crisis meeting with various people from the team and took his decision to stop. But what's interesting, I think, for me looking back, and I discussed this with Orla as well when we heard this news, was that when I interviewed him last week, after the interview, I felt subdued because I felt he had been subdued. He's normally a very, very engaging person to interview. And the interview, I was questioning all kinds of things about the setup. The sun was kind of shining behind him, so I wore sunglasses throughout. And Orla and I debated for a while whether me wearing sunglasses had acted as a kind of barrier between us, because he just wasn't himself. And it's easy to say this with hindsight, looking back now, but
is that because
he was flat?
Is that because he dropped his phone halfway through the interview? Had he smashed his smashed his screen? Was he worried about that?
He did smash his phone, but that was towards the end, so I don't think that was the reason. But there was just a general a kind of lackadaisical feeling with Demula. And as I say, normally he is one of the most rewarding of interviews, and you know, when we went out to the camp to spend a few days and we contemplated interviewing Roglic, who unfortunately wasn't there, but all the other people on the team, it was Demula who you always, you know, think he's a banker in terms of giving you great quotes and generally engaging really well and being very thoughtful in the interview. So he wasn't quite himself. I wouldn't even be talking about that had he not dropped this bombshell a few days later, but It's a big story, isn't it? And I think we're going to devote most of this week's episode to talking about it, because it raises lots of questions about the sport as well, and about Demula's future. Obviously, will he come back? Is that the last we've seen of him? Am I the last person to interview him as an active professional cyclist?
What a way to go!
What, for him or me?
Well, have you been having an existential crisis about your interviewing technique this week, Rich?
Will any riders give me an interview again?
Maybe if they're looking for a way out of their contract.
Oh, God.
They'll be queuing up.
Oh, dear.
I must
We're
admit,
not going to be frivolous, because it does raise some serious questions as well.
I must admit, Rich, I watched all your Jumbo Visma interviews back to back, and I was squirming slightly on about the fifth or sixth one when you deployed the tactic, which we've all used in the past. Just one more question about last year's, that awful, traumatic Tour de France experience last year? Just one more question. And then you duly followed up with three or four more.
Again, that's interesting too, because the team weren't understandably too keen for us to dwell too much on the 2020 Tour de France. But like you, Lionel, I prefer to talk about something that's actually happened, that's concrete, that's factual, rather than looking ahead to a season that hasn't happened yet. Having said that, Orla's interview with Wout van Aert I thought was fantastic, with him looking ahead to what he might do and green jerseys and monuments and so on. And I think unusually, that's a team that, you know, has lots of things it can do in the future, though my looking ahead to the season with Tom Dumoulin ended up being rather pointless. He was, you know, talking about riding the classics in support of Wout van Aert. That's not going to happen now. We move on, but we will talk about this story. Only the second biggest story in cycling this week, of course, with the news that Decathlon are going to be selling replica rainbow jerseys. And I thought this would hit your buttons, Daniel. Many buttons at the same time.
Right, it's overdue, isn't it? The warehouse of dreams entering the fray in professional cycling. Of course, it's been the centre of my cycling universe, sporting universe, for a long time. So good news.
Will you be in there getting yourself a rainbow onesie?
Possibly when I go bow and arrow shopping the next time I'm in the vicinity of a Decathlon.
You'll be able to buy a rainbow jersey design tent for camping in, or a rainbow jersey dartboard. What else do they? Well, they sell everything and anything for sport and outdoor recreation. We're not sponsored by Decathlon here. Let's be clear.
Not yet. We're working on that. Is that like they don't sell Life in the Peloton caskets, so Lionel? Is that what you're wearing there?
I am. Yeah, Mitch sent us all a Life in the Peloton casket.
Oh, nice.
Mitch Docker, host of Life in the Peloton, sent us some before Christmas. They took a month to arrive here in not Watford, but they're here now. So next time I see you, I'll give you your Life in the Peloton caps.
Time you see me, what about 2023 are we aiming for?
Maybe just before the tour in June, it's looking like, hopefully, fingers crossed. Yeah. Just on this Decathlon tie-up with Santini, who make the rainbow jerseys for the UCI and have a sponsorship deal with the UCI, what's your view, Daniel, on just regular Joe being able to stroll into Decathlon and buy a rainbow jersey? That there is a school of thought that says the rainbow jersey should be the preserve only of world champions, reigning world champions at that. I mean, how would you feel if I was riding around here wearing a rainbow jersey, passing myself off as a world champion?
Honestly, very much in line, you know, with my lack of kind of, you know, dogmatism about other issues. It's not something that phases me or fusses me overly. You know, cycling clothing in general, the Velominati, is that the name of the what would you call it, cult organization,
unofficial bible?
The conventions about sock length and things like that, not something that, you know, interests me overly. I know it's an issue that gets people very exercised. Things like national champions jerseys and always creates a lot of debate on social media, doesn't it? But not something that really causes me to lose much sleep.
Of late, I've been riding on Zwift in a 1998 Commonwealth Games Scotland jersey. I don't know.
No,
of course I haven't, Richard.
You have not.
No, I haven't. It's safely in a bag.
I want that bag, and I hope it'll still fit me. Is that the tea bag one?
That's the see-through one, yeah. The one that you just about squeezed into during our live events a lifetime ago.
Yeah, I've still got the marks on my flesh. Have you got a news roundup for us, please, Lionel?
I have. I'll rattle through a few items from the last couple of weeks of news. Of course, we're going to devote this episode mostly to the news that the butterfly of Maastricht has fluttered off, whether temporarily or permanently, we don't yet know. Some other more serious news concerning Elia Viviani, the Cofidis sprinter. He's had heart surgery. The procedure is called atrial ablation to treat an irregular heartbeat that he noticed while out training near his home around Verona. So best wishes to Viviani. Not quite sure at the moment what implications that has for his season. Daniel, do you know from the Italian press how soon he may be back? I don't think there's any word on it yet, is there? We shall watch and see. Some races are already being cancelled or are set to be rescheduled because of coronavirus. Very much a case of wait and see what happens and what doesn't. But we do know that the Tour of the Algarve, which was dominated by Remco Evenepoel, has been cancelled, as has the Vuelta a San Juan in Argentina. And the Ruta del Sol in the south of Spain is hoping to reschedule itself in May. Chris Froome is set to make his debut for Israel Startup Nation at the UAE Tour, which starts on February the 21st. He's been speaking to the media recently and told The Guardian that he's been still suffering a bit of pain because he's got a screw in his leg after surgery following that crash at the Dauphiné in 2019. And he said that he'd been riding since his comeback with a 20% deficit in quad strength on his right side. Froome is possibly going to ride the Giro as well as the Tour this year.
Yeah, I was in that Chris Froome digital press conference, virtual press conference the other day, and put a question to Sylvain Adams, who's the team owner, Israel Startup Nation, sort of Canadian-Israeli team owner, about the vaccination of riders, because I think it's well publicised, well documented that Israel is very far along in its vaccination programme. And of course we had the news a couple of weeks ago about the UAE team Emirates having vaccinated their riders already. And Sylvain Adams was absolutely delighted to get this question. He's a very fervent, I suppose, advocate of Israel, and you know, the team is called Israel Startup Nation, so he's very keen to promote everything good as he sees it about that country. And he was thrilled to talk about the vaccination program in Israel, and he also said that there might be special arrangements made for the riders once I think the majority of the population in Israel, or a certain threshold, is reached of people being vaccinated in Israel. He has a relationship with the health minister there, or so he suggested, and there might be special vaccinations for the riders at the around about the end of March, early April.
Interesting. Well, one rider who may ride the Giro instead of the Tour de France this year is Groupama FDJ's Thibaut Pinot. That would deny the French the chance to see one of their best GC hopes in the Tour de France, of course. But Pinot, who finished fourth in the Giro that Tom Dumoulin won in 2017, may well go back there instead, according to the team. Bora Hansgrohe's riders were hit by a car while training near Lake Garda in northern Italy, and worst off from that incident were Wilco Kelderman and Andreas Schillinger, who both suffered fractured vertebrae and concussion. Rüdiger Selig also went to hospital. The other four riders, including Paris-Nice winner Max Schachmann, were treated for minor injuries back at their hotel. Not good news that, but fortunately it doesn't appear that anyone is too badly off, although Kelderman's injuries, fractured vertebrae and concussion, not good. Dr. Mark Schmidt, the doctor at the centre of the Operation Adalas blood doping investigation, faces possibly 5 years in jail after being found guilty of 24 counts of using doping methods. And Stefan Denifil, who won a stage of the Vuelta while riding for Aqua Blue, has also been handed a 2-year prison sentence, 16 months of which are suspended for fraud. Basically, having admitted blood doping with Dr. Schmidt, he secured professional contracts fraudulently. The hearing into Dr. Richard Freeman's fitness to practice medicine has resumed. Freeman, who was doctor at Team Sky and British Cycling, of course, had asked for an adjournment so that he could help administer coronavirus vaccines. There's been quite a development late on in this hearing, because Simon Jackson, the lawyer for the General Medical Council, made a fresh allegation that Freeman had worked with sleepers, ex-dopers working within Team Sky and British Cycling, and in summing up said that the only logical conclusion was that Freeman had ordered testosterone to help a rider or riders dope. That's a claim that Freeman denies, and his lawyer Mary O'Rourke is due to make her closing argument today, but she did say that the latest allegations from the GMC were a complete change in their case, so we shall wait to see what Mary O'Rourke says in her summing up. Shimano's replacing Mavic as the neutral service providers at the Tour de France. Mavic had done that job for the past 4 decades. They've been in trouble a bit financially in the last year or two, but the distinctive yellow cars and bikes that are in and around the Tour de France peloton will be no more. They'll be replaced by Shimano, who complete the Grand Tour set because they do the same job at the Giro and the Vuelta. It's the Cyclocross World Championships in Ostend this weekend. Organisers are confident it will go ahead despite a spike in cases of coronavirus, one of the new variants of coronavirus in that part of Belgium. But we're hoping it goes ahead and that there's a showdown between Wout van Aert and Mathieu van der Poel, who between them have won the last six world titles. It's currently 3-3, so somebody has the opportunity to nudge into the lead. Wout van Aert maybe has the form because he won the final round of the World Cup and the overall World Cup title at the weekend. We'll also see Britain's Tom Pidcock in there. He was silver medalist last year. And three-time world champion Zdeněk Stybar of De Koninck Quickstep is racing for the first time since 2014. But no Fabio Aru, though, who's been dabbling in the mud.
And Henrik Hausler. Henrik Hausler as well.
Is Henrik Hausler on
it
the...
It is. Henrik Hausler, he suggested in the pod with Mitch Docker that he was intending to ride. There was another thing I was going to mention about that otherwise fantastic pod with Mitch. They talked quite a lot about Hausler's stage win in the Vuelta in 2005 in his debut Neopro season. And I think it's been said before, including by Hausler, that he was either hungover or drunk when he won that stage. And it wasn't, there was no alcohol consumption was mentioned, but I seem to recall him having spoken about that in an interview with Rouleur before.
Interesting. And finally, the Tour Down Under may have been cancelled because of coronavirus, but there has been the Santos Festival of Cycling, and much relief for everyone that a sense of normality has returned to the world because Richie Porte won on Willunga Hill. He'd won six in a row before last year. And even last year, I think he was quickest up the hill, wasn't he? Although Matthew Holmes won the stage, but Porte actually rode the Strava segment quickest. But yeah, you can't stop Richie Porte on Willunga Hill. Not even a global pandemic can stop that happening.
You're listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. iwoca.co.uk.
Thank you very much to our title sponsor, iWalker. iWalker help small businesses. And if you have a small business or know somebody who runs a small business, do go to iwoca.co.uk. iwoca.co.uk to have a look and see what iWalka can do for you.
Nobody's racing at the moment, but does it play on your mind that it's been a while since you did race? Is that something that you worry about at all?
Not necessarily worry about, but I doubt a little bit, like, how is it going to be if when I come back into the peloton? Do I still know how it works, and do I still know how to fight for position and stuff like that? You know, about my physical condition, I'm not too worried. I mean, I know what I can do, and I know what I can do in training, and that's the same as any other year. So, I'm quite confident about that, but it will definitely be strange to just be in the cycling world again. I've been out of it for so long. Anyway, nobody will have races for at least half a year. So actually we will all be in the same position in September end of August. So,
Is it easy to keep motivated when there's so much uncertainty? Do you find that difficult or not?
No, not really. No. I had it last year already, and I had a lot of time last year to reflect on what I wanted, what my ambitions still were, what I love about the sport and what I don't like about the sport and about my job, actually. And I had so many answers I take that into this year. I know what I want, and I know where I want to be when this whole corona crisis is over. And that is what gets me up every morning, and I'm still very motivated.
What's harder? Is it being out long-term with an injury or being sidelined like everybody else as we are at the moment? What's tougher?
The injury.
When everybody else is still racing.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's in the same boat now, which is not nice. I mean, it's not a nice boat to be in altogether, but at least we're in this together. And last year felt like, yeah, I was the only, and it was actually true. I was the only one sitting in that injury boat. And that was definitely harder to accept at times.
Well, chaps, that was Tom Dumoulin speaking last year, an interview that I did with him for Our Giro, where we look back on his Giro win and also the moment in his Giro win that Daniel likes to dwell on, and we'll hear a bit more about that, unfortunately, later. But he was talking there about, you know, having a lot of time to reflect in 2019 when he was out with injury for most of the year. And looking back now, or listening back now to what he said, it was interesting in light of the decision that he's now made, that he gave a lot of thought then to, you know, his motivation and whether he was doing something that was meaningful to him, I suppose, and where he felt he could still commit in the way that you have to commit. And those words, that part of the interview takes on, I suppose, extra significance now that we know and that he's admitted that, you know, really last year in particular, but obviously the year before as well, he's been doing a lot of thinking about whether he's been doing something that he really, really wants to do.
Well, Rich, indeed, and I suppose for all of us, it was a kind of half a surprise last week when he announced he was going to take this break. There are very strong echoes of what happened with Marcel Kittel. There are numerous similarities between the two riders. Obviously, they both started at the same team, made their name at the same team. What was it in its various incarnations? Argos Shimano, Giant, and now Sunweb, or most recently Sunweb. And you know, similar in the sense that both very well spoken, both very affable fellas, both, you know, media darlings really. Both got magnificent hair, very striking cheekbones, and had health issues that preceded decisions to step away from professional cycling. So in Kittel's case, that was a virus that caused him to, he missed, it was a large part of the 2015 season, I think. And then shortly thereafter, broke his contract with what became Sunweb and moved to Quickstep. And Dumoulin had a knee injury, didn't he, at the Giro in 2019. And a few months after that, he broke his contract with Sunweb and moved to Jumbo-Visma. But we've long felt with Tom Dumoulin that he has interests outside of professional cycling and he has horizons outside of professional cycling. You know, he's from a family, well, quite a middle-class family. His dad's an IVF specialist at the University of Maastricht, I think, or a hospital in Maastricht. I think his mum works for local government, but it's quite a sort of middle-class family. And with Dumoulin, there have often been hints in interviews, things he said, that he has thoughts and entertained ideas of a future, you know, a near future outside of professional cycling. I mean, last week, the image that immediately came to my head was, well, the last image I have of him racing, which was his last day of racing last year at the Vuelta a España. And it was, well, a week into the race. It was a race that Jumbo-Visma had gone to try to win. And he had started leaking time pretty much straight away. And, he'd helped Primoz Roglic. He'd done bits and bobs of work. But he'd been very down on himself. I'd interviewed him most days there. And he'd, in a similar vein to the way he'd been at the Tour, he'd sort of played down how well he was riding and he'd been complained of being tired. He was very candid, in fact, in a way that, you know, usually we would welcome. But as the days went by, as we saw him, you know, he kept coming to the mix zone and being down on himself. It was almost all the reporters, the journalists, were sort of trying to pep him up a little bit and trying to convince him that actually wasn't going too badly. But anyway, this culminated in, I think, well, the day after the first rest day in a place called Villanueva de Valdegovia in the Basque Country. And he came in well down that day. And sure enough, he would pull out that night. But the image that stuck in my head was that he came over the line. I don't know how many minutes he'd lost, but a significant amount of time. And it was pretty clear that he was thinking about quitting the race. But he was met by a soigneur. He's a German guy called Achim Schmiedel, I think his name is. He's been around various teams over the years. And I think he just joined. He might have even come in on the rest day, Achim. Last year, there were a lot of teams had problems, you know, sourcing soigneurs and staff. And so there were a lot of guys kind of freelancing. Anyway, Achim had just started with Jumbo-Visma, and he met Tom Dumoulin over the line and sort of gave him his towel, and they started a conversation. Achim's German, Dumoulin Dutch. And Dumoulin said to him, do you understand Dutch? And Achim said, oh, no, but, you know, German, we, you know, there are a few similarities. It wasn't 5 minutes, but a sort of 40-second conversation ensued about the similarities between the Dutch and German language. And this was after, you know, a pretty brutal stage in the Vuelta, and at a time when Dumoulin was sort of facing a mini crisis in his career. And it was just a very curious conversation for a guy who's just finished a stage of a Grand Tour. And I, you know, watched all of this and listened to all of this. And then Dumoulin came over and he did his usual thing in the mix zone. But it was almost as though, you know, this was a guy who was trying to escape to normality. You know, for some people, cycling isn't this escape from normality. And with Dumoulin, increasingly, I'd got the feeling over the last few months that maybe a sort of window had opened in the corner of his mind through which there was a glimpse of normality that he wanted to escape to.
Yeah, I think you look back at the last couple of years and it's obvious that Dumoulin has not been quite the same as he was in 2017 and 2018. For a while now, and looking at his whole career, 2017 was the pinnacle. He won the Giro and the World Time Trial Championships, and then 2018 was very nearly the season of a lifetime, second at the Giro and the Tour and the World Time Trial Championships. And although he was beaten fair and square in all three of those events, he was a real fixture in the biggest events in the world. And I think back to the road race at the World Championships in Innsbruck, when he was the most dynamic figure in that finale, chasing Alejandro Valverde, who eventually won, Romain Bardet and Mike Woods, you know, riding on, you know, guts and instinct and determination and panache and all the things that endeared Dumoulin to a lot of cycling fans. He came up just short of a medal, finishing fourth, but I think there was a sense then that more was to come from Dumoulin and that he might be the first Dutchman to win the Tour in almost four decades. But since then, it's been a catalogue of illness and injury and misfortune. And I think you can trace a lot of that back to the 2019 Giro, when he crashed on the run into a stage into Frascati early on in the race. The weather was bad and he crashed going into a roundabout or coming through a roundabout and bashed his knee up pretty badly. And I remember the following morning, he hobbled down the steps of the Sunweb bus to speak to the media and then went off to the start. And it did seem strange that he was, pushing through. He didn't look like a man who thought he was going to make it to the finish of the race. And, well, sure enough, he made it a kilometre and a half into the stage and called it a day. And I did think at the time that was an unusual decision for the defending champion. But did he feel that he owed it to the Giro to show the race some respect, or was he trying to prove a point to himself that he was doing everything possible to continue, or was he trying to prove something to the media or the team? I don't know. But then he rode the Dauphiné a few weeks later and he pulled out of that with a day to go, and after that he was due to go to an altitude camp in the Alps before the Tour de France. But on the drive down to the Alps he decided to turn round and go home, and then he announced he wouldn't ride the Tour de France. And well, everyone missed a long period of racing because of COVID, but Dumoulin's absence from competition stretches from mid-June 2019 to early August 2020, because he was due to race in February last year at the Vuelta Valenciana, but he delayed the start of his season because he was diagnosed with intestinal parasites, and then COVID hit and that was that. So more than a year out of action. And then when the racing did return, I never felt he cut the happiest of figures. It wasn't the Moulin of old. Remember at the Dauphiné, he was one of the most outspoken about that pretty dodgy descent of the Col de Plamboix, which Stephen Kraswijk crashed on and pulled out of the race. And then at the Tour, you know, he started so well, was in real contention early on until the Pyrenees. If you remember, he put in that big turn on the Perisord and then sat up and lost a couple of minutes. And it turned out that he told his teammates and sports directors that he wasn't feeling his best. So he sacrificed himself for the team. But I remember we discussed this at the time. Was it a sacrifice or was it self-sabotage? Because I certainly felt that having Dumoulin in the top five was always more of an asset to the team than having Dumoulin down in 15th. And although he did come good again towards the end of the Tour, I think rewatching the Dutch TV documentary, which took us inside the team at the Tour last year, knowing what we know now, it is possible to pick up hints that he was out of sorts and not the Dumoulin of 2017 and 2018. But I mean, you know, that's with the benefit of hindsight.
I wonder as well. I mean, watching that documentary was fascinating. I on the Jumbo-Visma camp last week, I spoke to the guy who shot all 400 hours of footage from which that documentary was made. And that was interesting too, because the documentary was very, very focused on Dumoulin, to the point where as a viewer, you felt almost as if Dumoulin was the star, even though Roglic was the sort of preeminent rider in the team. But that was made that way because it was for a Dutch audience. And I think everyone on the team felt it was a very partial reflection of the Tour. But what you get a sense of, I mean, that is not Dumoulin at his best. He still finishes seventh overall. And he, you know, his performance in the La Planche des Belles Filles time trial, where he was second, would have been, well, he said himself last week that was as good a time trial performance as he's ever done. He was beaten by Tadej Pogacar, of course. But he had the saddle sore that was troubling him. And of course, that can be very debilitating and a real problem. But I do wonder, and I did wonder watching it, how Roglic would have dealt with a saddle sore. You know, it seemed like the saddle sore was almost a metaphor in a way. It became, I remember there's one moment in the film where Dumoulin says that he's there in body, if not in... in spirit if not in body. He's there, he can support the team, but he really doesn't feel physically like he's able to give his best. And I do wonder if the boot had been on the other foot or the saddle sore on the other bottom, whether Roglic would have allowed himself to be as defeated as Dumoulin seemed to be, without knowing how bad it was. You don't know, because as you know only too well, Lionel, with your knowledge of Sean Kelly and the Vuelta back in 1987, you know, that can be an awful injury and a real handicap. But it just felt watching it that it was it became a bit of a crutch for Dumoulin.
Well, something we've also talked about, chaps, is just the juxtaposition of Rog and Dumoulin in the team and in Dumoulin's mind. You know, there are a few things more alienating and more demotivating than, you know, feeling not great yourself in a certain situation or being unsure about whether you want to do something, not fully committed, and then seeing someone like Rog, who, you know, every morning gets on the bus and seems up for the fight and seems indestructible. I mean, I felt pangs throughout last year. I felt pangs of guilt at times when I was speaking to Dumoulin in mixed zones. So that was at the Dauphiné, at the Tour, and at the Vuelta, and kind of kept emphasizing my questions to Dumoulin, and other journalists were doing this as well, how indestructible Roglic seemed. And also, you know, at times Wout van Aert, just emphasizing, you know, how Wout van Aert could do absolutely everything, and he continued to surprise us. And you know, with hindsight, and maybe even slightly at the time, I could kind of see Dumoulin's shoulders slump when I kept stressing this point to him. But it is true that when you're in an environment where things on the face of Well, on the surface, are going very well, and the team's very successful. They're the number one team in the world, and they have this leader, this talisman, who just seems unfazed by everything. If you are having doubts, that could be a bit of a double-edged sword.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car, the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Babbel. Now, Seb is, he's fluent in at least two languages, English and French. Not sure whether he speaks any more. He may well do. He might be listening. He can let us know which other languages he's fluent in. So he may not need Babbel for English or French. But Richard, you've been using Babbel to improve your French since you've moved over to France. And I've been dabbling with Italian. And I feel like I'm getting to the point now where I can remove my linguistic stabilizers and I'm sort of moving through the gears, so to speak. And it's just adding to my knowledge of the Italian language. I might be able to I'm not going to impress Daniel at the Giro, am I? But I might be able to at least contribute this year.
Babbel is great fun. I mentioned it in last week's episode that I enjoy the game element and the fact you get a score each round, each lesson. I wouldn't like to sound like I'm too fixated on that. It's not a competitive sport, learning a language, but I do quite enjoy seeing what my score is each game, and it's 15 minutes a day, if that. I mean, sometimes you can rattle through these lessons in less time than that. Or you can stop one mid-lesson if something happens and return to it. So I really enjoy Babbel. You said earlier, Lionel, that I was plugging away with my French. I like to think I'm a bit more, not fluent, but as you are rattling through the gears, and it's definitely helping me a lot and improving my French. Daniel mentioned earlier on that Tom Dumoulin is something of a linguist, or certainly appears to be quite interested in language and very, very good in English. Well, maybe if he's taking a break from racing, he'll want to try Babbel to learn a new language as well. Who knows?
Well, all of our listeners can get 6 months free with Babbel when they purchase a six-month subscription by using the promo code CYCLE. And Richard, at the moment, there's a new Babbel podcast. Certainly, there's a French podcast as well, which you
listened
can listen to.
Two episodes yesterday on my mountain bike,
there
actually.
There you go. And that supplements the app, which you can play either on your desktop or on your phone. I say play, but there is a kind of game element to it, and it sort of becomes addictive, and you kind of get into the habit of doing it each day. And you can choose one of 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian and German. So go to babbel.co.uk/play and use the promo code CYCLE. And when you sign up for a six-month subscription, you'll get another 6 months free. That's babbel.co.uk/play, promo code CYCLE.
Well, chaps, our colleague Dan Hackenberg has interviewed Merijn Zeeman, the head of performance, or he's not head of performance, actually. He's now sports director at Jumbo-Visma, but he has a sort of coaching background, and he worked at Sunweb with Dumoulin as well in the past. And he talked about the circumstances that led to this decision, that it was a kind of summit meeting on Friday afternoon that at which the decision was made. It was Dumoulin's decision to stop. But he did say that he'd sort of observed Dumoulin struggling or questioning all year, last year. And he talks about a training camp, an altitude camp in Tignes in France just before the Tour last year, where Zeeman says he couldn't enjoy what he was doing. That's not fun, and it's hard to see. In Tignes at the altitude camp, we were in the most fantastic place, fantastic house, lake view, beautiful mountains, beautiful skies, all together to prepare for the Tour. I saw everyone enjoying it very much, but Tom found it very, very difficult to enjoy it. I saw that, and we talked about it a lot. To recognise that you can't enjoy what you're incredibly good at, that's hard. He also makes another comment about the importance of not linking your identity to your performance as an athlete. Whether you win or lose does not say anything about you as a person, which is something Dumoulin talked about too. But on that point that you made, Daniel, about the comparisons with Roglic and the, you know, I think somebody like Roglic, and I talked about this a lot in last week's podcast, about the influence of Roglic in terms of his attitude, his single-mindedness, his devotion, dedication to his job. And Zeeman talked about how important he was in terms of providing a role model to some of the younger riders as well, people like Sepp Kuss and even the development team. And that can be, somebody like that can be very inspiring, but also as you say, very difficult to be around if you don't feel able to make that same commitment, if you're questioning it, if you're struggling to sort of rationalize it. Another little story from last week, and we'll hear this interview in the next Cycling Podcast, Femina, but there was a woman there I recognized, Nancy van der Berg. Now, I was at their training camp 2 years ago and I interviewed her. She was their food coach. She's a nutritionist, and having been a professional cyclist. And she was back at the camp this time in Jumbo-Visma kit, having signed for the new Jumbo-Visma ladies team. And so I was very curious to know what happened. And basically, she had retired and stopped, but she'd been at an altitude camp with Roglic. And she said that one day she watched him on the turbo for 6 hours. And being around him and seeing his absolute commitment, his willingness to live entirely for his sport and to, you know, be as good as he possibly could be, she found that inspiring, and it inspired her to get back on her bike and start training again. And here she is back on the team, and she was absolutely buzzing with that sense of having that, found that purpose again. And, you know, you mentioned Kittel, Daniel, and the comparison with Kittel. I think with Kittel, he moved to Katusha, hadn't he, and really lost his way and seemed to have lost the habit of winning. Nothing was going right for him on the bike. Whereas for Demula, you know, fairly recently, he was performing at a very, very high level. And I just wonder if, you know, sometimes someone can step away and, as he put it, step off the train, and they can get it back. You know, it can come back, and you can realize that at 30, he's still got a good few years left in him. I don't know, and I don't think he genuinely knows what he's going to do. But it's not impossible, I don't think, that he will, at some point, who knows when, decide that he does want one final chance to see what he can do. And it might not be a grand tour. It might be an Olympic time trial or something. I don't know. But I have a feeling that the future is not decided for Demula, and he's genuinely stepping back to see what he decides.
You talk about purpose there, Rich. You use the word purpose. Another word I would use is sort of intentionality. And with Roglic, you know, there's this story of, well, in 2007, I think he had a terrible crash as a ski jumper, but it was another 3 or 4 years before he this idea started to kind of germinate in his head that he wasn't going to be the world's greatest ski jumper, and he wanted to be, so he needed to look for something else. He started doing bike races, and then, you know, within a couple of months, he decided that he was going to pursue this seriously, and he was told that he needed to pony up €5,000 for a bike, and he didn't have €5,000 to join this the team that he eventually joined, and he worked in a supermarket, making him, in fact, I think his first of two stints working for a supermarket. So, strictly speaking, he works for one now, doesn't he, Jumbo? But he so
mop
he saved
up on aisle four, Primoz.
Yeah. So he saved €5,000, and within 3 months he was back, sort of knocking at the door, saying, "Here I am." And then there was the sort of second instalment of that was when he joined, well, what is now Jumbo Visma, and he told them, to their surprise, they thought he was, well, they were hiring a domestique, a guy who might become an okay rider. He said, "Well, I'm going to win the Tour de France within 5 years." So he's someone, wherever it came from, you know, whatever the sort of value system was that generated that focus, he had it. And that's not how Tom Dumoulin arrived in professional cycling. Dumoulin was a runner, he was a footballer, and then at age 15, I think he stood at the roadside and saw Amstel Gold, and something, a spark was lit. But he was very physically talented, and he sort of, you know, being in the Netherlands, you're already in a system, in an environment that's kind of conducive. If you have a talent in cycling, there are clubs, there are teams, there's a pathway. And, you know, you can find yourself, if you are that talented, at 21, 22, suddenly on a conveyor belt of sorts. And, you know, that's maybe been the way he's felt all along. He was doing these races, winning these races because he could, not because it had come from any deep burning sort of sense of vocation or mission. But as you say, he might find it. When you mentioned Kittel there, I remember speaking to to Marcel when he, a month or two after he decided to take the break and he came to the Tour de France to work for German TV, and he was still then undecided about whether he would or wouldn't come back. And I asked him and he said, well, you know, I really don't know. I've got an open mind. That, with hindsight, was quite telling, because even after two or three months away, and he just didn't have strong feelings either way. And I think you need strong feelings to be a professional cyclist, particularly nowadays, because it demands so much commitment. And
there was talk of him going to Jumbo Visma, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Kittel at that time.
Yeah.
And you know, yeah, the clock ticks on, and you know, Dumoulin spoke in that interview that we did last year about how difficult it was to come back having missed a season in 2019. So you miss another season, and it's harder, and the sport is harder, it's more intense, and people like Roglic have raised the bar in terms of commitment. I mean, there he is sitting for 6 hours on a turbo trainer at an altitude training camp. As I say, that can be inspiring or it can be very demotivating. But he had a lot going on, didn't he, Dumoulin? And you mentioned his interest in language, Daniel. And another exchange that jumped out at me in that interview we did last year was when I used the word intertwined, and he sort of stopped the interview to just understand exactly what that word meant, which is quite unusual.
Seemed to be kind of quite intertwined in a way, copying Bartoli and
inter what?
Well, kind of linked.
In a way.
The Giro especially.
Well, what's that word?
What's that, sorry?
What's that word?
Intertwined. Intertwined.
I never heard that
no,
before.
No, really?
No, it's a good word.
Intertwined. You can use that in a press conference at some point, I'm sure.
But intertwined.
Yeah,
okay.
We've been reading a lot about...
It's sort of linked.
Yeah, linked.
Okay.
Intertwined,
cool.
Yeah. And Lionel, I mean, you did a long interview with him, didn't you? Which was all about his sort of interest. Are we going to, can we hear that?
famously, we all remember that. Oh, no, we don't remember that.
We can't hear that interview, Richard. No, this was during the early days of the 2017 Giro, which he won, of course. And he was high up on the GC at the time, certainly in the top 10, maybe about sixth or seventh one morning. I think we were in Sicily. And I'd been asking the team if I could have a chat with Dumoulin, because we'd got word that he'd holidayed in Italy the previous year, or maybe a couple of years earlier, and had an interest in Italy as a country and the culture and the wine. And as you know, in these situations, you're at the start of a grand tour stage. It's a sort of nervousness of, is this a really frivolous interview request? Is it going to be awkward and embarrassing? As it turned out, Dumoulin came outside the Sunweb bus and spoke freely for a good 20 minutes. I mean, it was an episode of Kilometer
Zero. Well,
that
sounds brilliant. Can we hear that
it
now?
It was an episode of Kilometer Zero that would have basically, we just could have played Dumoulin talking about his interest and burgeoning interest in Italy, and in particularly in the wines and you know, his appreciation of the
amazing
countryside in Tuscany and Umbria. Unfortunately,
I can't wait to hear this.
And what was striking about it, as I say, was that here we were.
You hadn't pressed record
in the middle of the Giro d'Italia, that he was obviously hoping to win and ended up winning, and he was. Talking with such kind of freedom and looseness, I suppose, about something else completely detached from the race, and he seemed to embrace and take on that opportunity to just escape from the race for 20 minutes. It was a lot longer than you normally get talking to a rider outside a team bus at the start, and I walked away feeling extremely pleased with myself. An episode of Kilometer Zero in the bag. I went and got myself a coffee, thought I'd listen back just to see what some of the highlights were, and it hadn't recorded properly. It hadn't recorded
properly. So we can listen to that
properly. So all we got was a low hiss. And, Dumoulin went on from that point and won the Giro. I suffered a few days of deep self-loathing and depression as a result of having fouled up so badly. And Daniel had to dig me out of a bit of a hole with an ad hoc episode of Kilometer Zero. But there we are.
There was a very low moment for you, Lionel, the 2017 Giro. Very high point, the highest point, really, in Tom Dumoulin's career to date, wasn't it?
And talking to me about wine and Umbria.
should we remind ourselves of Tom Dumoulin and when his star was at its highest in that 2017 Giro?
Thank you. everybody down with it with a blade of his hand, and he might just come through to take the day. Oh, he's going to. Here he goes. Picks it up. Dumoulin has done it. King of the mountain, king of the hills, king of the time trial, and I think king in waiting of this Giro d'Italia. Wow, what about that?
And he's changing his jersey. Tom Dumoulin. Oh, no. No, no, no. Dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Problems.
Good news is that Tom's kept the jersey. The bad news is he had to stop. You've probably heard to go to the toilet before the last descent of the Stelvio. He took all his clothes off and went to the toilet at the side of the road. Did you know anything about his stomach problems?
I didn't know. I heard on the radio something about him stopping. I can't comment on that.
Where are you guys from?
From Holland, Limburg. Yeah, we are supporters from Dumoulin. We've arrived in this morning, and we've gone after the final of Ajax yesterday.
Ah, so bad day yesterday, good day today.
I think 30 minutes after the final was gone with the wind, we went to, it's exhausting. But it was great, it was great. Tommy did great for the today. Tommy Dumoulin.
Here he comes, we're waiting to welcome our champion, and Tom Dumoulin, oh boy does he deserve this, and he's still powering it in, he hasn't given up at all, he may not take the final day stage, he's got one of those in the bag already, Tom Dumoulin has done it, here's Nairo Quintana, and he's starting to realise it's mine, says Tom Dumoulin. Here's your final standings. Tom Dumoulin wins overall by a margin of 31 seconds.
I had some bad moments after the Giro, like, whoa. If I have to live like this for the rest of my days, like, people recognize me everywhere to... You can not just peek your nose in the supermarket because somebody is at that time taking a picture without asking. Or
is that the
you have to always be cautious if you go into public, and I don't want to be cautious, but that is the reality, and I can better accept it because it's not going to change. Yes, I have obligations to sponsors and partners and also journalists, and that's not what I became a cyclist for. That's not my dream, but that I can handle. I mean, it has become part of my job. But what for me didn't become part of my job is coping with that at home in my private time. Then I'm also coping with being Tom the cyclist for a lot of people, and I would like to not have that, but it's not possible anymore. So it's either moving or accepting, and I'm going to accept it.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport, our long-standing supporter. If you want 25% off all your Science and Sport products, go to scienceandsport.com, enter the code SISCP25, that's SISCP25. And if you have a question for James Morton at Science and Sport, a question about your own nutrition or the pros' nutrition, email us contact@thecyclingpodcast.com. Now, we heard before the break there a little package from the 2017 Giro d'Italia, the heady days, really, for Tom Dumoulin.
Some quite painful memories for me as well.
Very painful for you, Daniel. You didn't enjoy all of memories. That race, did you? But I think we enjoyed, covering Dumoulin, and we will miss him because he's always very engaging, and in that race there was a bit of beef, wasn't there, with Nibali and Quintana, and one of the things about Dumoulin is he was always very open about stuff like that. He often came and spoke, and then it did cause a bit of a stooshy in the Italian press in particular, and he would backpedal a little bit, but he was very, very open and often very candid to a fault, as you saw at the Vuelta last year, Daniel. But you really did feel when he sat there in the press conferences that he was telling you quite honestly about his day and about how he was feeling.
Yeah, it was interesting, you know, at the end of the little montage we heard there, just about how his life had changed since, well, and that interview actually was done in the winter, so a few months after him winning the Giro, and he felt his life has already changed for the worse in some respects, but that didn't seem to dim his personal ambition, and he seemed sort of reconciled to the fact his life had changed. He did start to protect his privacy quite keenly. I remember, I think the following year, so about a year after that interview, trying to speak to him about his honeymoon in Nepal. I think he went to Nepal in the winter of 2018-2019. And, you know, in a very sort of polite, friendly manner, he said, well, that's, you know, it's kind of private. I don't really want to talk about my honeymoon, which was perhaps quite telling. But we will miss him, Rich. I mean, from a selfish point of view as a journalist, we all miss him a lot. And we'll miss the kind of... Well, we'll miss what he did for Dutch cycling, what he was doing for Dutch cycling. You know, it's been, well, it's 1980 was the last Dutch victory in the Tour de France. And it's been this storyline for the last, well, four decades when the Netherlands would produce a Tour de France winner again. They have great support at the Tour de France, Dutch Corner, Alpe d'Huez and so forth. We all imagine that it's going to be, you know, huge when it does happen. And Dumoulin had all the credentials, really, to not just be a Dutch winner of the Tour de France, but also a huge national star. And that was quite exciting, even for us as non-Dutch journalists. As far as the team is concerned for this year, I mean, you announced the team, the Tour team, 2021, Jumbo-Visma Tour team in the pod last week, didn't you, Rich? So very few changes from, I think just one major change really from last year that was due to be, or two main changes actually. Stephen Kruiswijk, who of course missed the 2020 Tour because of injury, because of a crash in the Dauphiné, he was coming back in. And then Armin Jansen, the Norwegian rider who has left the team, gone to Bike Exchange, he was going to be replaced by Mike Tøynesen, of course, the winner of the first stage of the Tour in 2019. But how much... Well, they're going to have to replace Dumoulin with someone now. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, they might even have to, you know, bring in somebody new. They have this development team, a couple of riders turning pro later in the year, but they've got quite a small squad, really. Jumbo-Visma, 27 now with Dumoulin stopping for the moment. So I wonder if they'll try and bolster their squad a bit. But in terms of the team for the Tour de France, the big shame really is the excitement in the team around sending those three riders to the race. And Richard Pluger told us last week that he believed 100% that either Kruiswijk or Dumoulin could also win the Tour as well as Roglic. And having those three cards to play, because I think they felt they didn't, really, they had one strong card to play last year with Dumoulin not quite at his best. And, you know, unleashing those three at the Tour was generating a lot of excitement within the team. So it's a major change for them now in terms of strategy.
Yeah, and they've got a couple of riders, a couple of good climbers who you might think would be candidates. I mean, Jonas Vingegaard was fantastic, the young Danish rider at the Vuelta last year, but he's been earmarked again for the Vuelta, and Sam Omen as well, who's joined the team from Sunweb, was quite instrumental for Dumoulin 2018 when he narrowly missed out on the Giro, well, defence of his Giro title. So Omen, though, has had a lot of, well, he's had injury problems, health problems the last couple of years, and he also has been earmarked for the Vuelta. The big priority, I think, for this team at the Tour in 2021, and people are going to, again, they're going to kind of turn their noses up at this, but I think the bonus seconds are, again, going to be absolutely key for Primoz Roglic in the 2021 Tour. I was looking at the route the other day, and you know, the first two stages in the Tour de France this year are great opportunities for Roglic to pick up bonus seconds. There are more opportunities on stages 7, 8, 14, 15, 17, 18. You could conceivably, imagine a scenario where Roglic takes over a minute again in bonus seconds, and then the time trials in this year's Tour are sort of, well, one is 20-something kilometres, one's just over 30. So even with what we know now about Roglic possibly being vulnerable in the last time trial of major tours, I think those two are fairly manageable distances for him. So I think he couldn't wish for a better route. But I think the bonuses will be key if he wants to actually win the Tour. And they kind of need someone to keep the races, well, to help keep the races together going into the last kilometre of those particular stages. Which is a job that Dumoulin did at times in 2020. And conversely, chaps, on the bonuses, I talked a few weeks ago about how Ineos really need to address this, and they need to stop Rog gaining a sort of 3 minute or so in bonuses. And I think it's going to be difficult because, as I say, I've looked at the route and I think there are lots of opportunities. Do you know who could come to their rescue? Mark Hirschi could come to their rescue. If he rides for UAE, and you know, we saw what he did at Flèche Wallonne last year, he could be useful for Pogacar, but he could also be useful for Ineos because he could potentially pip Rog to a few bonuses. Mattia van der Poel as well.
Hugely speculative, all of this.
Well, he might win
time bonuses in July, but I mean, I'll let it go.
I was critical, wasn't I, Napalm, of when people took umbrage at Rog winning the Vuelta, basically by virtue of bonuses. I said, well, look, you know, other teams have to start looking at this and stop them doing it. I mean, I've been using a platform. There's a platform being used now by teams for scouting called Fuori Classe. Is the name, it's an Italian name, and it's run by some French guys, and they were kind enough to give me a trial a couple of weeks ago. So this is a sort of a data platform being used by teams to scout riders now, and it told me that Rog in the last 2 years, he's won 26% of all uphill finishes, so any kind of uphill finish, so 2 kilometers or 20 kilometers, 26% that he's taken part in, and 38% when the climb has been under 2 kilometres in length. So even the sort of Alaphilippe, as I just said, Hirschi-type finishes, Rog has won 38% of them.
And Van Aert is a huge asset for him in that sort of terrain. Correct. As well, isn't he? I mean, let's not, you know, Dumoulin will be a major loss, but they still have a very, very strong team. And Sepp Kuss could be the third prong of the trident. You know, who knows?
Sepp Kuss is the kind of the ideal successor almost to Dumoulin, and both in sort of style on the bike and off the bike. I mean, I think that's the thing about Dumoulin. You know, he was elegant on the bike, elegant off it. And even when you look back to his first big breakthrough at the 2015 Vuelta, where he really hunted down Chris Froome in the final 150 metres of that Vuelta stage, stage 9. This was a Chris Froome who obviously was not at his best and eventually pulled out of the race. But Dumoulin, you know, he hung on, and noticeably bigger frame that he had in those days. I'm talking about his physical size. You know, he's much more upper body then. He's sort of slimmed down into this sort of pencil thin figure, and I suppose he fits the bill of Francois' Tour de France cookie cutter shape, the winner being an excellent time trialist who is also a climber rather than a sort of pure climber who can, you know, muscle their way around a time trial. So, yeah, I mean, Dumoulin, his career has really kind of mirrored a Tour de France mountain stage profile, hasn't it? Some fantastic highs, but some pretty difficult lows. You know, pulled out of a lot of Grand Tours as well as finishing on the podium a few times. So he shall be missed temporarily or permanently. We don't know at the moment.
on a final footnote, Rich, on Sepp Kuss. I was curious. I was very interested to listen to his interview last week and also what Richard Plugger said about him. Kuss has had a real pattern, particularly over the last year, of frittering time in the last kilometre, the absolute opposite of Roglic. Frittering time in the last kilometre of uphill finishes. And, you know, that's partly because he's allowed to sit up, but you know, he's got a long way to go, and I think he knows that and the team know that before he can, you know, just become another Dumoulin and do exactly what Dumoulin or Jumbo Visma hoped that Dumoulin were going to do.
Final word on Dumoulin. You know, he will be missed on the bike and off the bike. But I think that it's a courageous thing to do, to stop and to take time for yourself. There's been a sort of rush, a clamour to almost interpret his move as some evidence of weakness or some kind of mental breakdown. I think it's the opposite. You know, I think he's, we saw it in the interview that he gave to the team a few days after his quite subdued interview with me, where he did look like a man and speak like a man who'd had a weight lifted off his shoulders. He's in a position to be able to do this financially, and so on. But nevertheless, it shows, we were speaking about this earlier, Lionel, you said self-awareness. It shows a self-awareness. And again, maybe being around Roglic at training camp so on has been a part of that, that, you know, when you look at and see what it takes to be as good as you can be and fulfill your potential, and you sort of realize that you're maybe not able or you don't want to make that commitment, then that can just open a crack in the door, and this is the kind of culmination of that. But who knows, if he steps away, takes some time out, he might realize that actually he does want this. We don't know.
I mean, let's face it, there was a time in professional cycling when a lot of riders were taking gap years, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, it was almost the norm.
It was almost the norm. Can I introduce my new feature, the much-anticipated slow radio? We've had a few submissions. Let's hear one from Toby Smith. So there we are, some sounds of cycling. They were put together by Toby Smith when he was living in Brooklyn. He lives in California now. It was in his apartment with his bike and Prospect Park where he was riding. So that's the kind of idea. We're getting a few more submissions as well. Lionel, I think you're going to record a bit of slow radio.
I'm going to record a bit of slow radio this afternoon. Yes, I am, yeah. Me gently snoozing. No, I'm joking.
Or interviewing Tom Dumoulin. The idea is that it just transports you away for a few seconds to a bike ride or some kind of cycling action. We've got some slow radio from races as well, which we may well play in future weeks. So keep them coming in. Contact at thecyclingpodcast.com. Before we go this week, big thanks to all of you who've signed up as friends of the podcast. Lots of you have been signing up as friends of the podcast or renewing as friends of the podcast.
Before we do our thanks, can I ask a question? A tech question? For our tech department, Lizzie Banks, Tom Wally, maybe you chaps can answer this. We mentioned Tom Dumoulin's saddle sore earlier in this episode. Why has that issue not been... Why have cycling manufacturers not provided a solution, a cure to that issue? Why does that... How can that still happen to the extent where it can jeopardise someone's Tour de France?
Is that not like asking why do runners still get blisters? I mean, is it not just... Yeah. It's a contact point and... you know, you're vulnerable there, particularly if you're a cyclist, spending a lot of hours.
Is it not possible to?
I don't know.
Is there no, you know, saddle shape form that will completely,
eliminate?
Eliminate that issue.
Very hard to, once a problem begins there, it's very hard to reverse it, other than by taking time off the bike, which you can't do. So I'm afraid I don't know enough about, you know, Dumoulin was on a new team. Was he using a new saddle? Someone out there, lots of you out there will know the answer to that. I don't, unfortunately. But we'll put it to Lizzie Banks and Tom Whalley, shall we?
Do that, please.
Let's do that. Okay. Yes, thank you if you've signed up as a friend of the podcast. We've got more special episodes coming for friends of the podcast very, very soon indeed. Working on a couple at the moment. I've just been finishing my 2020 Tour de France diary as well. How are you getting on with that, Lionel?
Well, I haven't done that yet, but I've got a couple of things on the front burner at the moment, vis-a-vis Excellent. Friends of the podcast episode one, which I think we'll release in late February or very early March. But I'm doing
that. Very exciting. Well, if you want to sign up as a friend of the podcast, go to thecyclingpodcast.com and do so. Your support is invaluable to us. Thank you very much. And thank you to you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, chaps.
See you next week.